everybody. Welcome to the Strong Marriage Now community call. This is Amy Barnhart, co-founder of StrongMarriageNow.com, and I'm here with Dr. Dana today. Welcome to all of you that have joined us today. We're so happy to have you with us. As you know, each month, as part of this special membership, we hold a call where we share the topic of the month for around 15 minutes, and after that, you get to personally talk to Dr. Dana and ask your question. I do want to let you know that the call is scheduled to last around an hour today, and Dr. Dana does have a hard stop at 2:30. She's got a client that she needs to travel to, so you know, it's going to stop in about an hour. So let me tell you about this month's topic. It is the importance of gratitude. Now, here in the United States, we have our annual Thanksgiving tradition coming up, so we thought this would be a very timely topic to discuss. Turns out that being grateful, however, is something that should be celebrated a lot more than once a year. And it's a key principle of being happy in relationships and happy in life. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And after the topic of the month, you'll have the opportunity to talk to Dr. Dana and get your question answered. And as you may have heard me say before, this doesn't have to relate to the topic of the month. It can be any relationship question that's on your mind. And I'll tell you about the logistics for how that's going to work and how you'll ask your question after Dr. Dana covers this month's topic. And Dana, take it away.
Thanks, Amy. Hey, everybody. This is Dr. Dana, as Amy mentioned. Thanks for being on the call today. And we are going to talk about gratitude. Now, I know that this might seem like a kind of a touchy-feely topic to some of you, and you might be thinking that it maybe doesn't apply to you or your situation, but I highly encourage you to hang in there because you actually might be surprised about how important it is. And after I talk for a bit, I want to encourage all of you on the call to ask any questions you have about anything you need help with. Amy's going to tell you how to do that later. And, you know, honestly, it's a little bit easier sometimes for me to answer your questions when I have you on the phone. But Amy's also going to tell you how you can ask a question without calling in, because you can type in your question, and then Amy reads it to me, and I can answer it that way as well. She's also going to explain how to do that later. So, and also I'm supposed to remind those of you that do call in that the call is being recorded and will be available for community members to listen to again. And again, I want to encourage you guys to just call in or write in any way that you really feel comfortable. So, okay. Now, I also have to cover the terms of service. I have to say this one every time, so just bear with me. By being on this call, you are agreeing to the terms of service, which basically say that I am not agreeing to be your therapist, and this isn't one-on-one counseling. I'm just going to give you some information about the importance of gratitude and hopefully give you some answers to your most pressing questions. All right, now I got that out of the way. Let's get started. As I mentioned before, the topic for today is the importance of gratitude. And I'm not just talking about the age-old principle that all of our moms taught us about, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. That's actually not being grateful, that's just being quiet. I mean that there's actual real science showing how being grateful, truly appreciating the people and things around you, affects your health, your life, and especially your marriage. There's this great book, in this book, The Happiness Advantage, I don't know if any of you guys have read it, I highly recommend it, by the way. It's actually a book meant to be used in the workplace, but I find it's very applicable to marriage. In his book, The Happiness Advantage, Sean Acor, that's the author, cites a study from a psychologist named Robert Emmons, who has spent pretty much his entire career studying the concept of gratitude. And, let me just read it to you. It's probably easier than me paraphrasing it. So he says that few things in life are as integral to our well-being, meaning there's not a lot of other things more important to our happiness than being grateful for our lives. And he goes on to say that countless other studies have shown that consistently grateful people are more energetic, they're more emotionally intelligent, forgiving, less likely to be depressed, anxious, or lonely. And it's not that people are only grateful because they're happier either. Gratitude has proven to be a significant cause of positive outcomes, meaning, this is my stuff here, the more grateful you are, the more you will have to be grateful for. The science actually proved that. And Acor, the author, explains that when researchers take random volunteers and train them to be more grateful over a period of a few weeks, they become happier, more optimistic, they feel more socially connected, they enjoy better quality sleep, believe it or not, and they even experience fewer headaches than control groups who were not taught to be more grateful. I think you guys can tell, and it's kind of obvious with all these things, how being more energetic and less depressed and more forgiving and more connected and all that other stuff can affect your marriage. In fact, there's all kinds of studies that show that gratitude starts, you know, a cycle, like really, of relationship growth, where each individual feels motivated to strengthen the bond with their partner. And you know what that means to me? That means healing to me, right? Anybody who's motivated to strengthen the bond can heal any sort of rift and any problem between the two of them. So when we learn to be grateful, we start a cycle of what I call healing. So how do we get there, right? How does one become more grateful? Well, let me back up. First, let me tell you about what not to do. Let me tell you about a horrible pattern that many couples get into. My dad used to call it being pecked to death by ducks, which I didn't understand until I got married. So it's when one or both members of a couple are constantly pointing out what their partner is doing wrong or not doing right or not being exactly who they want them to be, blah, 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 goes on and on and on. It's like this person they used to be madly in love with is now the most annoying person on the planet, and they have to point it out all the time. But you know what that is? That's actually just to do with perspective. That person, you know, that they're married to probably hasn't changed all that much. But now the complaining partner is really kind of only looking for things to be wrong. Their perspective is off. They are most certainly not looking for things that are right or things to be grateful for. And one of the reasons that this occurs is called a selective perception. That's a psychology term, basically. And I kind of explain it to like this. When someone believes that old people can't drive, right? If you think old people can't drive, then you go down the street and you will see the little man that's driving 5 miles an hour. And you will see the little old lady that left her blinker on, and you will see the little old man that cut you off. But what you will not see is the 5,000 other old people that are driving just fine, because we tend to look for evidence to prove ourselves right. So if we feel like that, you know, we're unhappy or our partner isn't enough or they're this or they're that, we will always find evidence to prove ourselves right. And that makes it remarkably difficult to be grateful, because you're never going to even see or you're not going to perceive, again, selective perception, that you're wrong. You're only going to look for evidence that you're right. So you'll see all the things that they do wrong. So, I liken it to, you know, I could go outside. I could look outside right now, and I could see telephone wires and pavement and see the cars going by. All those things are there. But, you know, if I really chose to look at it differently, I can see blue sky, because I'm in San Diego, and hear birds singing and see flowers if I look out my window right now. So if I deciding on what I'm looking for is, or deciding on my perspective, it determines what I'm going to see. So anyway, back to what we can do about this and how to be grateful. So the good news is we can retrain our brains to notice the good and not the bad. The science actually shows, the medical science now, irrevocably, that our brains are like clay, and they can be retrained to look for the positive. They can actually be retrained to do all sorts of things, but this is just one of the things. If you've always been a negative person, or if you've always been had a hard time with gratitude, you can retrain your brain. And there's lots of different kind of ways to do that. I'm going to cover just a couple of my favorites really today, because we don't have a lot of time, and I know we want to get to your questions. So one of the ones I like is to pick a time of day every day and write in a gratitude journal the things you're grateful for, excuse me, in your life and in your marriage. And this forces your brain to look for the positive. And then with time, it trains it to do it automatically. So if you get in the habit of every single day looking for something that you like about your life, looking for something you like about your marriage, eventually the neural pathways in your brain get retrained, and that's what you do automatically. So you won't look for the negative. Another one I like is to set an alarm on your phone or your calendar, and when it goes off, to call or text your partner with one thing about them that makes you happy. Now, be careful about this one, guys, by the way, so you don't give backhanded compliments. And a backhanded compliment, you guys probably know, but I'll give you an example, is, let me think of one. So, okay, well, thanks for the back rub last night. I can't remember the last time you did that. Okay, that's a backhanded compliment. That's saying thank you and I'm grateful for something, but it's smacking them on the other end, right? Because it's telling them you don't do it very often. So that's not being truly grateful, and it won't work as far as creating the warm, fuzzy feeling you want in your partner. So, thanks for the back rub, awesome. I'm truly grateful for you and how much you cared about me last night, great. Don't add the backhanded part. That's a bad habit a lot of us have. And finally, one of the things I like is, and I do in my house as well, is to create an entire climate in your whole home of gratitude. You know, you can ask your kids when you tuck them in, what was the best thing that happened about your day? What was it, you know, what is it? Don't ask them that what was the worst thing question. Just what was the best thing? What did you like about this day? What mattered to you, you know? And you can start to train them to look for the positive in their day.
Oh, that's awesome. I'd like to share what I do with my family, too, personally. We have our family dinners, and at each of our family dinners, we all share at least three things that we're grateful for that have happened recently. And we started this tradition this summer because I felt concerned that my 13-year-old son was starting to grow apart from us, and he was becoming way more interested in his friends and school and hanging out with good old boring mom and dad. And I was also kind of concerned that he didn't really get how amazing his life was and how good he had it. So when we first started sharing what we were grateful for, he kind of was like, oh, do I have to do this? Mom, you know. Of course, he was kind of a reluctant participant. But, yeah, you know, I kind of made him do it. And now, like several months later, he is the first one that wants to start with the gratitude.
Aww.
And he always shares way more than three things. And, you know, it's amazing. Like every time, one of the things he's grateful for is his school. Like how many 13-year-old boys are like, oh, I love my school. So I'm feeling it's a huge victory. Anyway, he is so much more bonded to us, laughs more, and we all feel a lot closer as a family unit. So I also have found that everybody in the family is looking a lot more on the bright side of things. And instead of complaining or stressing, they're really looking at the positive, and I highly, highly recommend giving this a try. So it's another way of incorporating gratitude into your life.
Ah, that's totally awesome. I love that idea because, you know, it doesn't really matter how you do it. It just matters that you do it consistently, right? That's how we retrain the brain. It matters that we just consistently come up with a new way to look at things and a better way and a way that has more gratitude. And the more you share your gratitude, just like you're talking about, Amy, with others, your spouse, your children, family members, friends, even coworkers, really, then the more those relationships are actually strengthened as well. And everybody learns from it. Everybody learns from your example, and they can all learn how to be positive and to be grateful. So, and the other thing I truly also want to bring across here and wrap up with is you don't necessarily need to limit the things you're grateful for to the big things in life. You know, I mean, sometimes being just grateful for a beautiful sunset or the smell of how great dinner, you know, is, can be just as satisfying as being grateful for a beautiful home or a great job. And more specifically, when it comes to spouses, and this is kind of critical why I wanted to wrap up with this. Being grateful for who they are, like how he smiles or how she just tucks her hair behind her ear, can be and is most often even more important to mention and to pay attention to than all the things they do for you. Okay? So make sure you pay attention and are grateful for who they are, not necessarily what they do for you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing all those ideas, Dr. Dana. I know I apply those to my life, and I know they make a huge difference. So I highly encourage all of you guys to take it to heart, start your gratitude routine today. So now what I am going to do, though, is transition the call into the time where you get to talk personally to Dr. Dana and ask your questions, and I'm just going to tell you a little bit about how it's going to work. Dr. Dana is going to spend around 3 to 5 minutes per question, and unfortunately she can't spend a lot longer with each one of you just because we've got lots of you guys on the call and the webcast, and we want to help as many of you as possible. And we know it's tough to cover these really difficult situations that many of you guys are in only 3 to 5 minutes, but understand we're doing that to get to as many of you as you can, and really appreciate how helpful everybody's been on past calls about just diving right in and asking your question when it's your turn. I also wanted to mention that on previous calls, I noticed that there's sometimes some follow-up questions that come up via the webcast. And unfortunately, again, because we're trying to help as many of you as possible, we're not able to answer those on the same call. But I want to just encourage you to feel free to call back next month with follow-up questions or use the forum to get your follow-up questions answered. So if you want to raise your hand, I noticed somebody already has, which is awesome. You can raise your hand and get in line to ask your questions if you're dialing in by pressing *2 on your phone. That's *2. Or on the monthly call event page, if you clicked in to listen for free, there's a way to ask your question. What you do, you'll see in the left nav a way to ask the question. So you just click on the left nav there and enter in your information, and we'll be fielding both actually, you know, calls personally on the phone as well as those webcast questions. And if you are on the phone, please let us know your first name and your question once you're unmuted. And I'll let you know who's being unmuted by listing the last four digits of your phone number. So I'm going to go right now to the caller ending in 6877. You are now unmuted, and please state your name and your question. Hello. Hi, caller ending in 6877. I don't know if you are still there. You were one of the first people to raise your hand. Can you state your name and your question? Okay, well, let's move to the next one.
Call back
ending
if you call back really if you guys have already hung up.
Yeah, we'll check back in. They're still on the call. So caller ending in 6268. You are now unmuted. If you could state your name and your question.
Hi, my name's Anthony. Hi, Dr. Dana and Amy.
Hi, Anthony.
My question is, currently my wife and I have been separated, and since she wanted a divorce, we've only been on texting terms, so it becomes extremely difficult to communicate to her.
Mm.
So my question is, you know, how do I communicate, you know, for example, gratitude or, you know, kind of be her cheerleader when I'm kind of like, you know, pushed off into the sidelines?
Yeah, that's, you know, communicating by text, you may have heard me say, is one of my least forms of communicating, especially about important topics. Is that because she refuses to communicate in any other fashion?
Yeah, she refuses to communicate in any other fashion besides from text.
What about email or anything? I mean, I realize she won't speak to you, but
you know, I've tried email, but I'm not, you know, to be honest with you, I haven't really put a big effort into email. I just kind of let her kind of lead the way where we're going, you know.
And I get that. I get respecting her and her wishes. I would maybe try email a little bit longer, and I still feel like, and actually, as much as I don't love writing as a form of communicating important topics, I think for this particular topic, writing can actually be a wonderful way to, I mean, it's something as silly as, you know, hey, I woke up this morning and I remember that, you know, I was just thinking about that trip to Monterey that we had and how, you know, much I, you know, that meant to me and how, you know, how happy we were and, you know, and I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciate that. Like, you know, you could still sort of say that. I guess you could even type that in a text, so that would take a little while. But you can still kind of say those things and even little things. I appreciate last night how, you know, you were cool when I wanted this or that or, you know, something like that. So, and I would argue, too, that this concept of appreciation and I get it being her cheerleader is going to – do you have kids?
Yeah, we got two little kids.
Yeah, it's – you know what? It's I always say that when there's kids involved, you know, even if you guys do separate or divorce, it's just a change in your relationship. It's not the end of your relationship because you're going to be in each other's lives for the rest of your life. So it's still really important to get along and for her to feel like you're on her side and that, you know, you really – have her best interest and so forth at heart. And so it's still really important to do that. And I would do it, frankly, through the written word if that's the only way she's willing to communicate. You know, and again, be careful in those that you don't do sort of the backhanded things like, you know, hey, I was really thinking about this. Why can't we get together? You know, like don't add the tension and the guilt and the pain and all that other stuff. Just talk about the stuff that you're grateful for. And it really, when you don't add all that other stuff in there, it kind of leaves them it leaves them without anything to fight. Like, how do you fight that? How do you fight, hey, I was just thinking about that, and I really appreciate it. There's nothing to push back against, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
So I would try email, and if she doesn't want to read email, I'd write a letter, or I'd write really long texts, or I'd write, you know, anyway. And I appreciate what you're saying as far as I'm letting her lead the way, but there's a careful balance in that, you know? Like, you want to respect her wishes, but at the same time, if you need to communicate something, I would go ahead and push forward on that as well.
Okay.
Okay,
got it.
Sure. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Awesome. We're going to go to caller ending in 8274. You are now unmuted. If you could state your name and your question, please.
Yeah, my name is Anne.
Hi, Anne.
Yep. So I guess it's probably a common question. My husband and I both work full time. We have kids. You know, we have a house that has to be kept up. And
mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm doing all of that work. Like, I take care of the kids. I take care of the house. I deal with, you know, everything.
Mm-hmm.
I work full time just as much as he does. And I feel like I can't keep up with everything, and my husband won't help, and my kids don't help, and I'm just exhausted, and I feel really unappreciated, and I'm kind of at wit's end.
Right, right. Does your husband think he doesn't help? Does he agree?
Probably not. Probably thinks that, the two things that he does really pitch in.
Right. Well, that is a very common question, and it's a very, unfortunately, as you probably guessed, a really common question with women. Because that's usually how it's unbalanced. Even today, women are still doing, even working full time, they're still doing 80% of most of the household chores. I highly recommend, sitting down and, this is a particular exercise. I don't know if you, have ever gotten a system that explains it or if you want to check out our book, it's also in there as well, but I'll explain it really quickly to you. It's a great exercise where you basically sit down, both you and your husband sit down, and you, without blame and without yelling or whatever, you say something along the lines of, I'm overwhelmed. I'm unhappy. I'm overwhelmed. I find that I resent you, and I don't want to because I love you, and I want us to be happy, and I don't want to be mad at you all the time, and so I want us to do this exercise. And this exercise is you sit down and you both write everything that needs to get done. Everything that you do all day long and everything that he does all day long, including your work and including taking care of the kids and including, the grocery shopping and blah, blah, blah. You write all those things down, and you write generally how much time that takes. And then it's just math. And one of two things happens when you do this exercise. One is, and this is a possibility, even though it doesn't feel like it, consider it for a moment, because I see it happen all the time. One is that you actually see he does more than you think he does. I say that sometimes most people think there's 100 things to do, so if you're doing 75, he must be doing 25, when in actuality there's 150 things to do, and so he, based on his list, you may find he's actually doing more than you think he is. Or the other thing that happens is he finally has a real concrete idea of the imbalance that's going on in your marriage, and can see, rather than your perception or your, I feel this, or I all those sort of touchy-feely things that men don't relate to, they actually see the math. They understand the math. Okay, well, you're working for 8 hours, and I'm working for 8 hours, and then I'm coming home, and I'm working for 6 hours, and you're working for a half an hour. They can see the math. They can see the imbalance of it. And that concrete example and reality tends to make them kind of really adjust the way they do things. And then I highly recommend that you guys fairly divide the labor. Fairly say, okay, well, now there's 6 more hours to do, so I'm going to do 3 hours, and you're going to do 3 hours, and that's going to give us, by the way, an hour at night to spend together, where I'm not mad and I'm not overwhelmed and I'm not resentful, I'm more open to be loving with you, I'm less tired, I'm all those things, all those perks for him. And you just really explain it, in more concrete terms. What women tend to do is they say, I need more help around the house, and they think that means something to men. That doesn't mean anything to men. It's way too vague. That means something to me as another woman, but for men, it has to be very concrete. I need you to take a trash out on Tuesdays. You agree to vacuum on Thursdays. You agree to mow the lawns on Saturday. It's like it has to be much more concrete. So I would just sit down and write it all down, list it all out for him, and make sure that you're presenting it not as I'm blaming you or I'm mad at you, but I want us to be okay. I want to be close to you. I don't want to be mad at you. I want to have more sex. I want to, put all that out there as to what fairly dividing these responsibilities is going to do for the two of you. Okay?
All right. Thank you.
All right. Good luck with that. And like I said, that exercise is in a couple different places. If you don't have the system, I think you can get the book on Amazon, and it's real cheap, and you can get that, and it's all listed exactly what I just explained.
Thank you.
Awesome. You're welcome. Thanks.
All right. We've got a bunch of webcast questions, too, so I'm going to just take a webcast question here, mm-hmm. and then we'll come back to the folks that are raising your hand. If you want to raise your hand to ask a question to speak to Dr. Dana personally, press *2. Otherwise, keep those webcast questions coming as well. So Steve asks, using your recommendations, my wife and I have moved from a state of divorce and sleeping separately to sharing the same bed.
Yay!
I know, isn't that great? My question is how to initiate the sexual aspect of our relationship without upsetting our progress. She still has not shown any interest in having sex. However, we snuggle at night.
Interesting. Well, of course you would start with words. And I always say to people, don't ever talk about sex in the bedroom. It's not during the snuggling that you bring that up. It's over lunch, of course, when the kids aren't around. It's sitting on the couch out in the living room. And it's using words like, I am incredibly attracted to you. When you smile, it makes me want to be with you. That dress you wore last night, I thought would made you look fabulous. And it really, so in other words, if you're catching my theme here, I would share with her how important it is, how much you miss her, and how it's about her. Steve, it's incredibly, incredibly important for a woman that sex be about her, that it not be about your needs. When it starts to feel like it's about your needs, then she starts to feel like a receptacle. Got it? And then there's no interest. In fact, that can really turn a woman off. So I would really start talking to her about how attracted you are to her. And then I would start slowly again. If you guys have been in a non-sexual relationship for a while, it sounds like, that can be kind of awkward. And there's a lot of fun, and intense experiences that can happen, kind of rounding the bases again, if you will. So possibly talking to her, about just kissing. Sometimes women avoid sex altogether because they avoid even kissing or doing anything because they feel like unless they're going to want to go all the way, then they can't even start down that road. Possibly you've been disappointed before when it hasn't gone where you wanted or even showed anger in some way. And that can really make a woman afraid to even start exploring that part of your relationship again. So step A, I would start with talking to her about it, making sure that she knows it's about her, how much you love her, how much you want to be connected to her. And then secondly, I would start talking with her about what she would be comfortable with and how you would simply be happy to, as much as you love the snuggling, you'd be happy to just kiss. You'd be happy with a back rub. You'd be happy, and then letting her know that, of course that's where you want to end up, but you won't be mad if it's just that. You're understanding. You're happy to go down this road and get comfortable with her again and that you're very patient. So I would have those kind of conversations. And then again, don't have them in the bedroom and don't show any sign of, I know this is a difficult task, I'm sorry to ask this of you, but don't show any disappointment or sign of irritation and so forth if things don't go all the way each time. So those would be the two things I recommend.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Dana. Our next caller that's going to be unmuted is 4060. You are now unmuted. Hold on a second if I can press the button. There we go. You're now unmuted. If you could state your name and your question, please.
Hi, Dr. Dana. Hi, Amy.
My name
is Jeremy.
Yes.
My wife and I moved into a new house about 9 months ago, and she started to develop a friendship, with a neighbor, and I'm concerned that she's becoming a little too close to him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think she's cheating, but it just doesn't feel right, and I just kind of wonder if I'm overreacting or if it's natural. I mean, I just kind of need to know where to go from here.
What does she say about have you shared any of your concerns with her yet?
I kind of mentioned that she, you're spending a lot of time over there or you're hanging out with him a lot, and she kind of blows it off like, yeah, he needs a friend or we're new to the area or whatever. She's come up with different things to say like that.
Well, my advice isn't going to make you feel good. I don't know. In general, the research shows on affairs and that sort of thing, that when a partner has a weird feeling, they're rarely wrong. And I don't mean that necessarily that's gone all the way, that's happened or that they've acted on any of those feelings. But if you get a sort of a gut feeling like, she's friends with this guy and it's fine, and she's friends with this guy and that doesn't bother you, and then she's friends with this guy and it's like, oh, that doesn't feel right. That one doesn't feel right.
Right.
I always tell people to sort of go with their gut, and not in a jealous mean, but in sitting down and having a conversation about, honey, I'm going to protect us, and anybody can go too far, you can even quote me, throw me under the bus and say, Dr. Dana says that nobody in a marriage should be really good friends with the opposite sex partner or opposite sex person unless their partner is also friends with them. So unless you're really good friends with this neighbor guy too, then it's a bad idea. And it's just tempting fate. It's just not really a great idea. So I would have that conversation first. But what's the second most important part of that conversation is, what can I do to meet that need for you? What do you need from me? Do we need to go out more? Do we need to have more conversations? Do we need to have more fun? Do I need to be home from work more often? Like, what need is he meeting in her life that you're not?
Right.
So I would go with your gut, but then I would really be open and listen and try not to be defensive to, what can I do to be that guy for you? And if she's just saying, I need more friends, then be like, okay, well, let's come up with ways to make more friends. Let's go to more social things. Let's, you know, join the PTA at school. Let's, I don't know what we need to do. Like, help her get her needs met. But be honest about with yourself and with her that when you have that gut feeling and it just doesn't feel right, I really recommend people act on it, and they act on it quickly before it gets turned into anything that you guys are going to have to deal with and you don't want to have to go there. So go with your gut on this one.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you, Dana.
Sure.
And thank you, Jeremy. Our next question is a webcast question, and this one comes from Ira, although it sounds like it's coming from a woman, so I'm not sure if Ira is a woman's name or a man's name. So basically what's been happening in this relationship, I'm paraphrasing because it's real long, is that there's a broken trust that's been happening in their relationship, and that her husband has been looking at flirting, watching women all the time, lying about it, denying that he's, you know, flirting and those kinds of things. And so they've had this broken trust, and you know, they're avoiding talking about it, and she's like, doesn't have any patience anymore. She hates the lying, and she's had enough. So she's like, what do I do now with this situation? He's not going to change.
I wonder why he's not going to change. I mean, I don't know if he's necessarily protecting a particular relationship or a particular lifestyle. I do know that there's a lot of men, well, people, that's not a fair thing to say men. There's a lot of people out there that need that extra attention for some reason. They have sort of this bottomless pit of needing people to be attracted to them and people to flirt with them and people to find them sexy and so on and so forth. And until he kind of looks at that and figures out where that's from and what that's about and what kind of childhood stuff he's bringing forward into the relationship, he's going to have a hard time ever filling that need. And even if you do tell him he's great and wonderful and amazing and great and sexy all the time, sometimes that's not enough. It has to do with boundaries, and it has to do with you two have different ideas of where the boundaries lie. There is actually a really great book called Not Just Friends, I can't remember the author, but you could Amazon it. Not Just Friends is the name of the book, and it really does a great job of delineating what are the boundaries in a relationship, when is it okay to, you know, how far should, and even if this actually goes for the last caller, I would, Jeremy, read this book with your wife as well. Because it just talks about what is appropriate and safe boundaries in a relationship and what is not and what is too far and what is too risky and what kind of are the rules, as it were. And a lot of times people need a third party a third professional party to tell them what are the rules. And we even talk about it in our Affair Proof Your Marriage product. If you guys have that, or if you got it as a bonus, I think if you got the product, the system that we have, it just talks about there are certain rules about ways that you should be, you know, how close you should be to the opposite sex, what is a bad idea, what is a good idea, and really, you know, and so possibly introducing them to a third party professional who would say, and so he wouldn't just be hearing it from you and he couldn't just blow it off as, oh, you're being jealous or you're being overprotective or you're being any of these things. He can actually see the science behind it and also understand the pain that he's causing you and how much he's hurting you and what that means. So I would get somebody else or something else, either a product or our system or the book that I just recommended, involved, and then come at it, just like I said to the last caller, not from a blaming, I'm angry, you're a jerk sort of way, but I'm going to protect us and I want to keep our marriage together and I want to, you know, keep our family together, so let's read this together and see if you can't get them on board that way. So sometimes they won't change when you tell them to change, I guess is the end takeaway statement, but they often will change when somebody else does. So try and get someone else involved.
Awesome. I'm going to go back to that first person that had raised their hand. Caller 6877, you are now unmuted if you want to state your name and your question. Are you there?
Oh, well.
Well, perhaps not. So we got lots more webcast questions, so I'm going to skip back over there. But if anybody else, of all these callers that are on the list here, if you want to raise your hand pressing *2 on your phone, then you'll get to talk to Dr. Dana personally. This next question comes from Vinny, and he says, my wife is having an affair. How do I stop it and rebuild our relationship?
Well, a couple different questions I would have on there, Vinny. And one would be, has she admitted that she's having an affair? Or do you suspect that she's having an affair? And, you know, there's all different kinds of situations. So there's what you hope for the situation is that if someone has had an affair, that the other person is truly sorry and wants to repair the marriage and that affair is over and so on and so forth. But there's the other situation sometimes, which is the person having the affair is trying to decide if they're going to be with the affair partner or with their spouse. And that's an incredibly difficult situation, Vidy, and I'm sorry it sounds like from your question that that's a situation you're in. Depending on your tolerance or how far this has gone on, I would, you know, again, be having really honest and open conversations about wanting to save your family, wanting to be the man that she needs you to be, wanting to, you know, possibly get into counseling or so on and so forth. It seems to be the topic of the day, but that book I just recommended, Not Just Friends, is a great resource as well for her to read to see kind of what it's doing to you and the family and everything else. But at some point, and this is personal for everybody, but at some point you have to decide how much you can take, and whether, you know, fighting about it is destroying you or upsetting your kids or, you know, all this other stuff. So I will tell you that one cannot recover from an affair while the affair is still happening. So even the repair work that you guys need to do to save your marriage, to make it work, can't really even begin until that affair is over. So that's an incredibly frustrating and painful state of limbo to stay in. So I would make some deals with yourself and talk about how long you're going to be, you know, you're going to put up with this. And then here's my big one. Don't bluff. Don't say, that's it. If you're not seeing him in a month, I'm leaving. And then not. So be very clear before you draw that line in the sand, how much you're willing to put up with and what you're willing to do. And then again, I would have some real concrete conversations with her about what you're trying to do and that, you know, you can find a place of forgiveness, but you can work through that and your marriage can be better and you do want to meet all of her needs and have the marriage that she really wants, but that affair has to end. So I would, start that with that, I guess. Good luck with that.
Okay. Thanks. This next question comes from Sherry. And she writes, I'm not married, but I'm in a committed relationship. We're going to have a baby in 2 months, but we keep fighting. We have huge communication issues, but I do believe there's still love, at least on my side. He's not open to do this kind of thing. I think she's talking about the program and the system. So I will be the only one working on a relationship. Can it really work if I'm the only one that changes?
Absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, I don't know if you guys have heard us say this before, but 80% of the people that use our system are working on it on their own. So it absolutely can work. And you can learn all of those communication skills that we talk about in the system and all of that on your own, and it dramatically changes the way you guys communicate. It dramatically changes the way you fight. It dramatically, because you learn how to use I statements, and you learn how to not get in the ring, and you learn how to walk away or take a break or all the things that we talk about. And again, it takes two people to fight. So if you're not fighting, there's no fight. And you can make a huge, huge difference. And I got to tell you, what we've been hearing, you know, we've been at this for several years now, and what we hear all the time is that, you know, I didn't believe it, but I tried the system because you said it would work, and he or she has dramatically changed. One person changing in a relationship changes the whole system. It changes the whole dynamic of the relationship. And so, yes, I say yes, yes, yes. Please learn those skills, especially if you've got a baby on the way. And again, you guys are going to be in each other's lives for the rest of your lives, regardless of whether you stay together or not. And you're going to need to learn how to communicate about all kinds of things. And you can make a huge difference if you change. So it doesn't have to be with him. And I also say, by the way, a lot of times once they see that you know something that they don't know, that you're not fighting the way you used to fight, that you're not, you know, in as much pain and you're walking away from things and you're ending things, then they're willing. They're like, oh, what did you look at? Let me look at that book. Let me watch that 15-minute video. Whatever, it's 15 minutes of my time. I can do that. Like they'll come around often when they see that you're really, really have learned something and that things are changing for you. So heck yes, I say, please take a look at all that stuff on your own. It makes a big, big difference.
Awesome. Thank you. And just for all you callers that are out there that haven't raised your hand yet, star 2, I'm going to move to another webcast question. This one comes from Saul. He says, we're drifting apart, and my wife just moved into a separate bedroom. I've tried so many things, but I just feel like a dog coming back after being kicked so many times. How do we reconnect and fall in love again?
Wow. Well, without speaking to you on the phone, I don't know what you've tried, so I don't want to give you advice that you've already followed. I mean, maybe some of the things I'm going to tell you, you've already done. But I will, I have to, you guys have heard me say this before, I have to reiterate the time issue. Growing apart is, often a result of not spending any time together as a man and a woman. Often spending time together only as mom and dad or husband and wife at family functions and so forth, but no time as a man and a woman. And even if there is time being spent as a man and a woman, it's often not quality time or even, I would say, fun. Meaning it's talking about heavy stuff and, you know, and, oh, you're in the other bedroom and when are you going to do this and how can you come back and why do you always do that? And it's, you know, so any amount of man-woman time is draining and the other person starts to avoid it at all costs. So, again, I don't want to tell you something you've already done, but that would be the first place that I would go is trying to spend time. You know, the romance happens in the laughter. It happens in the fun. You guys fell in love, you know, having a good time. So if you're trying to fall back in love, you have to have some time where it's fun again and it's new and it's exciting and it's different and all the other things. So I'm sorry that you keep feeling like, I think you said like a dog, but at the same time, I admire that you're still working on it, that you're still trying. And then the other thing I would do, and maybe you've done this as well, so again, I apologize, I don't have you on the phone, is ask her. Without saying anything back, without going, but I did do that, or I did that, well, I tried that, and I would say, what would make you feel loved? And then just keep your mouth closed. Just listen, or ask questions. Well, you know, she says, well, you pay more attention to me. So rather than be like, okay, say, well, how would you know I was paying attention to you? How would you know that it is about you? How would you know that I want to be with you? What ways would I should? She'd say, well, you'd call me more often, okay? And what I don't want you to do is say, well, I called you, I tried calling you, and you just, I don't want any of that. Just listen to her. She, hopefully, if she's still, you know, in the house, will tell you, this is how I would feel loved. This is what would make me feel like you cared about me. This is what would make me care about you again. And don't fight it and just hear it and then see if there's any changes you can make from the information that she gave you. Okay?
Excellent.
Right.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jim, and he says, my wife is 49 and is starting menopause. She says she loves me but is not in love with me and wants a divorce. She says she's no longer sexually attracted to me, and he's more like a friend or a brother and no longer like a husband and a lover. They don't have sex any longer, and she doesn't want to give him false hope. So she's getting ready to move out of the house within the next couple of months. They have two children together, and they've been together a very, very long time. So he's wondering what he can do.
No!
Like, yeah.
Oh, that is such a common time, unfortunately, for women to determine they are not in love. And unfortunately, Mother Nature's, you know, big way of handling us having children after certain ages, they turn off our in-loveness. The Mother Nature just turns off our libido and turns off all that stuff, so to stop women from procreating after a certain age. So, oh, God, it's so normal, and it's got nothing to do with how she feels about you. And that's so unfortunate. So the biggest thing I would recommend is educate. Get all the information you can on being in love, the divorce rate of menopausal women, the sexual interest of menopausal women, all of that stuff. The bottom line is she's not going to feel that way about anybody right now, and because hormonally her body's just not in that zone. So I would get as much information as you can, get it to her in a non-blaming, non-accusatory way. And then secondly, I would tell, you know, again, if you can get the information that I talk about in the system about how it's normal to fall in and out of love in a long-term marriage, that nobody who's been married for 50 years feels in love all the time. Getting her the information, whether you have her listen to this call or, again, you know, any of the stuff that hopefully you already have about the fact that it's very, very possible to fall back in love with a person you already married. I mean, all that information, you know, I keep saying this in these calls, but it just always seems appropriate that, you know, a quote from our newsletter a few months ago was, getting divorced because you're no longer in love is like selling your car because you ran out of gas. I mean, it's just not, it doesn't make any sense. Everybody who's been married for this many years, for many, many years, falls out of love, but they can fall back in love
and it's a much better situation. So we need to get her that information, and we need to get her the information about her body, maybe, you know, even have her go talk to her, maybe go to her doctor if she'll let you go with her, or, and let her know that, yeah, again, it's normal, and again, her body is in a hormonal space that makes it very difficult for her to be in love with anybody at this point, and that's just nature, and that there's all kinds of ways to overcome that. So I'd really try and get some information as much as you can to help her. And always, I'm always telling people, make sure you don't come from a place of anger or blame, but as a place of, I love you and I want to save us and I want to save our family and here's what I know. You know, so it's more collaborative and not attacking. So good luck with that.
Awesome. So this next one comes from Monica, and she says, my husband always puts his mother's priorities over mine, and I'm feeling like a second-class citizen. Every time we talk about it, he says I'm just being selfish. I feel neglected and left out, and like he loves her more than me. What can I do?
Well, there's a couple things you could do about that. One, I would talk to him about how you feel, and not necessarily what he's doing in this step, but make a bunch of I statements. I feel neglected. I feel unimportant. I. And really let him know what that feels like for you and where that's coming from. Interestingly enough, and this is very controversial, but depending on your relationship with his mother, I would talk to her. And again, not in an accusatory, whatever way, but in a, you know, I love you and I want us to be together as a happy family. I sometimes feel like I'm second in this, you know, like, what do you think about that? You know, I mean, again, with a lot of I statements and a lot of compassion and a lot of, and no anger. I would also talk to his mom to some degree. Believe it or not, a lot of moms don't even know that they're doing it, don't even know that they're making their sons choose, don't even know that they're interfering in the marriages. I'm a mother of sons. I hope someday to have a very close relationship with my sons, even when they're married. But a lot of moms aren't really conscious of how that could possibly be affecting the relationship. And so, again, I would have those conversations possibly with him, possibly with her. Again, while I always like to direct people back to the system that they purchased and get some help there, I always have themes. Have you ever noticed that, Amy? There's always themes on these. I would recommend getting some information to him about the rules of marriage and possibly getting a third party involved, the professional involved if need be, or books or articles from the internet or anything like that, because a lot of times people need to hear it from somebody other than you, what the appropriate boundaries are and in a marriage and how much time, you know, and who they should put first, what the priorities should be and so on and so forth. And for some reason hearing it from a professional all of a sudden makes it true and real, and then it's not you being selfish or inconsiderate, it's actually like fact. So I would try and employ other sources as much as possible to get him some information about. And then honestly, again, I don't have you on the phone, but it could be possible that after you get that information, you realize, oh, okay, well, that's a normal amount of contact with one's mother, or, oh, then I actually am being whatever, selfish or overreacting or the things you'll get some information, or he will, but one way or the other, you guys will come to an understanding about kind of what is the right way to be in a marriage when it comes to the in-laws.
Excellent. Thank you.
Sure.
This next question comes from Eddie, and he asks, my wife and I are separated and are trying to put our lives back together. We have adult kids who are not accepting of their step-parents and don't wish us to be together, and my wife cannot accept my children and family and doesn't show any signs of yielding, but this is not a negotiable element for me. How do you advise we proceed?
So let me get this right, Amy. From that question, it sounds like they each have separate children that aren't each other's.
That's what it sounds like to me, yeah.
Kids are not necessarily accepting of, okay, got it.
Of their relationship, right. So they're separated and the kids are like, whew, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a couple different points in there. One would be, I want to know why. I want to know what the kids have a problem with or had a problem with or what went down that they're not happy about that. Are they being selfish, you know, kids, or which, you know, some people are. Is there some past transgressions on both people's parts that they need to apologize for, that both people need to go and say, hey, look, I'm sorry I was such a jerk back when you were 16, or I'm sorry that I was so mean to you about your own mother, or, you know, I don't know. I don't know what perceived transgressions are going on, but I would want to talk to the kids about it, and I would want to find out, well, you know, what is –
not in sort of a confrontational tone like this, but what is your problem with me? Like, what have I done and what don't you like? So I would first, you know, try and get at it from there. And then I would also, people in general can sense when there's a crack to widen, when there's a fissure to make broader. And if both people got on the same page and said, you know, we are going to be together, we love you guys, we'll always be available to you guys, we always welcome you in our home, but we're going to be together, and they sense that there's a united front and there's no crack to widen, they often back up.
Mm.
They don't really see that there's anything that could be done anymore, and then they sort of get resigned and decide to be happy. So twofold, yeah, I would find out what is their problem with, and then also come at it from a united front.
And I'm just, in rereading the question, I think there's one part that you might be able to help with. He says, my wife cannot accept my children and family and doesn't show any signs of yielding, so that's a big deal, too. It's not like the kids, sounds like the kids don't like it, but his wife has an issue with his side, and he obviously wants to maintain connection to his family. So,
wow. Oh gosh, that's so difficult. You know, when the priorities are different in blended families. So, as much as she's not going to like to hear this, and the bottom line is, well, they're not. It doesn't sound like there's young kids anymore, but is the kids kind of have to take priority for a while, but over the new spouse, when it's the parents of all the children, then it's the marriage that comes first. You guys have heard me say that, but when there's kids that come in, then the kids actually come first in that relationship and have to for a while. However, once they're adults, you know, again, I have counseled many people that have had separate relationships with their kids, and it's not as fun and it's not as nice, and it's better to have everybody together at Thanksgiving. But I have had lots of people that go to lunch and still see their kids and still hang out, but those people aren't necessarily close to their spouse. And I still kind of want to know, I wish I had you on the phone. I still want to know, what are all the details?
Yeah, I keep seeing if he's typing in any more information because it just came in. Oh, I don't know this. So we just got another question in, but it doesn't have a name on it.
I know, because we just said we're not allowed to do follow-up stuff anyway. We probably, because I see there's still a bunch more people. But
yeah,
this one's kind of tough without more information from me. But I would say that you could possibly work on having a different relationship. You could possibly work on getting everybody together in a room and having a conversation, potentially with a mediator or a counselor of some sort, airing out, apologizing, figuring out what everybody's so mad about. But in the end, I understand that if your spouse is unwilling to accept your family, then it's an incredibly difficult situation to make work, because they're in essence asking you to make a choice. And that's a really, really hardcore, decision to make. So,
yeah,
I might possibly get somebody else involved in that.
This next one just came in from the webcast, doesn't have a first name on it, but they asked, how do you keep a marriage going when living 3,000 miles apart?
Ugh.
That's a tough one.
Oh, gosh. You know, it's so hard, because what am I always preaching? I'm always preaching time together, right? Time together. It depends on how long that situation's going to last. If it's a temporary situation, you know, certainly military families and all kinds of people like that are used to being able to keep families together for 6 months absences at a time, maybe even a year sometimes. If it's a situation that's going to be forever, It's kind of virtually impossible, because it's not really a marriage, is it? It's more of a friendship, because there's no physical relationship. So, if it's going to be temporary, I recommend that people, have a lot of contact with, writing. Skype is a wonderful way, since so much of a relationship so much communication is body language. I would really recommend that you be able to see each other. I recommend that your number one budget priority be, living on top ramen if you have to, in order to get enough money to see each other as often as possible. And really changing, your finances in such a way so as to create that. And then in the end, if it's a permanent situation, if someone got transferred for work or if they're, away for any particular length, the marriage isn't going to last forever with you guys and being in separate places for a really, really long period of time. So I would work on possibly moving or getting the other person to quit said job and coming here, however that is that you need to work. But understanding that it's got to be a temporary situation to last long term.
Okay, we got time for one last question. This one comes from Anita, and she asks, can a marriage survive without normal sex? Because my parts are small and painful. I never have sex before. I never had sex before marriage at 43 based on my beliefs. And then at the beginning of the marriage, they didn't want, he didn't want normal sex because he didn't want her to get pregnant. But now, you know, 9 years later, they aren't talking about it. They're distant from each other. He's avoiding me. And, you know, there's been quite a bit of damage done, it sounds like. So she wants to know what she can do to work on the marriage.
In answer to your question, sex can mean all kinds of things for all kinds of different people. So, the answer to your first question is yes. However, that's only if both people are okay with it. A marriage is considered to have a sexual problem if one person is unhappy with the quantity and or quality of the sex. So, if one person is very unhappy about, the way things are in the relationship, then no. The answer is that needs to be worked on. But again, there's all kinds of ways to get sexual needs met, that wouldn't involve pain. And also there's a lot of education around that. Most pain for women, sexual pain for women is actually psychological. And that has to do with being so tense and so, scared basically that there's a lot of tightening of muscles and a lot of psychological problems that interfere with proper lubrication. And, you know, I don't want to get into all the details, but basically there's ways to overcome your physicality basically, and also it possibly might not even be the way you're built. It's oftentimes just the way that you think. And there's lots of self-help and great books on how to. There's a great book by Michelle Wiener Davis, I believe, called The Sex Starved Marriage, that addresses this particular issue with women, and how to overcome that and the psychological exercises that one can do in order to loosen up all those muscles and get into a better headspace. So in answer to your question, sure. I mean, if both people are okay with alternative, there's people with all sorts of different ways that they are happily satisfied sexually. But if one person isn't, then we've got to figure out a way to either, A, get that need met in an alternative way, or come up with a way that, you know, possibly you need to deal with whatever's going on with you in your own body, to be able to meet those needs for him. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you for answering all those questions, Dr. Dana, and thanks so much for everybody for participating today. We hope you found this valuable. I want to encourage everybody that has more questions to log in and use the private internet forum to ask questions of us and each other. And we'll also be sending you guys an email when this replay of this call is available on the membership site. I want to just point out you probably got the November magazine and CD from last month in your home. We hope you enjoyed that. And mark your calendar for next month's call. It'll be on Tuesday, December 18th at the same time. And the topic is how to get a checked out spouse back. So make sure you mark your calendar for that. I also know that many of you have asked to talk to Dr. Dana at length personally. And so she does have some one-on-one Skype or phone sessions available on her calendar. Not very many, but there are some available. If you want to learn more about that, you can apply for your session at strongmarriagenow.com/dr-dana-session, S-E-S-S-I-O-N, or you can email us and we'll send you that link to find out about it. It's, and the URL again is strongmarriagenow.com/dr-dana-session. And we really appreciate your feedback on the calls. We love hearing from you. If you found the calls valuable, please invite your friends and loved ones to join our email list. Really appreciate your support in getting the word out and helping us help more people. And thank you again for participating.
Oh,
Dana?
I want to say a couple more things. You know, like always, you guys, thank you for participating. I hope I was able to help in some way. And also, I just wanted to wish everyone you mentioned that earlier. Everyone in the U.S., because there's actually a lot of callers from all over the world.
Some of the webcast questions are from...
I know, everywhere, right? But anyway, I wanted to wish everyone who will be celebrating a happy Thanksgiving. And it is the perfect season to start being thankful and to start being grateful for everything and everyone in your life. So I really encourage everyone to take this almost as a starting off point and make a promise to yourself that you're going to do some of the things we talked about today and really try and get into a good, happy headspace right around the holidays. So, I always look forward to talking to you guys. I hope to talk to you next month.
Awesome. Yeah, and one of the things I'm really grateful for is to have a business that can help people like you on the phone. So that's always something I write down in my gratitude journal.
Oh, nice.
How lucky I am to have a business that helps people. So Anyway, with that, I just want to say thank you and happy Thanksgiving to those of you who celebrate it.
Thanks, everybody.
Wishing you well.
Bye-bye.
Bye.